regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. It is a big day in the Edwards household. Yep. Today is, it's nut cutting day for this big boy. Bentley is, he's at the vet today. And in honor of my special boy and his probably worst day of his life, we're going to neuter one of the gun control arguments here regarding constitutional carry or permitless carry, since Florida does not have true constitutional carry. You know, you cannot openly carry in Florida, but you can carry concealed without a concealed carry license if you are a lawful gun owner. And despite the predictions of gun control activists, another Florida city has come out and has announced that crime actually dropped last year, the first year that permitless carry was in effect. And we've already seen the mayor of Miami, Florida, announce that homicides in his city fell to the lowest number since 1947. That's really good news. And again, should have been impossible, according to gun control activists, right? They said that, crime is going to increase. Florida is going to become a more dangerous place after Governor Ron DeSantis signed permitless carry into law. And Miami, not an outlier. The city of Tampa reporting that violent crime went down last year in that city as well. Something else that, again, wasn't supposed to happen, according to the gun control activists. This is what they were saying as permitless carry was making its way through the Florida legislature after the House of Representatives cleared the permitless carry bill last year. Wendy Malloy, volunteer with the Florida chapter of Moms Demand Action, said that Governor DeSantis and House Republicans have chosen to make our beaches, restaurants, schools, grocery stores, parks, and everywhere else we go more vulnerable to gun violence. She went on to say, instead of serving the Floridians they were sworn to protect, these lawmakers are bowing to a gun lobby that feeds on their political ambition to rake in millions of dollars, all while not taking any responsibility for the role it plays in tearing families apart. Catherine Allen, another volunteer with the Florida chapter of Students Demand Action, said, we can't even have a spring break here without gun violence. Meanwhile, our lawmakers are pandering to the gun lobby and weakening our state's gun laws. To our leaders putting their political ambitions over their constituents, we have a message. If you want to ignore public safety to play politics, this isn't the job for you. We'll be here every step of the way to hold you accountable, from the state house to the ballot box. Yeah, nobody, by the way, is predicting the Democrats are going to take control of the Florida legislature this year. It's just not in the cards. And as for supposedly advancing the interests of the gun lobby instead of public safety, again, crime went down in most cities across Florida last year, which, according to the gun control activists, wasn't supposed to happen. Here are the numbers specifically for Tampa. You can see violent crime in 2022. 2,188 incidents in 2023, 2,007. Total crimes, that would include violent and property crimes in Tampa, in 2022, almost 10,000, right? 9,937. In 2023, that number declined to 9,252. Violent crime with a firearm, 752 incidents in 2022. Now, again, you would expect this number to grow the first year of constitutional carry, at least if you're a gun control activist. Instead, it dropped to 623 violent crimes which a gun was involved. So that's a 8.3% decline in violent crime overall, a 6.9% decline in total crime overall, and a 17.2% drop in violent crime in which a firearm is used. The Tampa Police says that nationally, the average decline in major cities for overall violent crime, 2.6%. They say the city of Tampa, three times lower than the national average, even with permitless carry in place, which again, just simply wasn't supposed to happen. There's another bit of good news, not specifically related to permitless carry, but I think might have something to do with the drop in violent crime. The Tampa Police reports that last year there were almost 500,000 calls for service, a 9.3% increase in self-initiated calls, a 4.2% increase in dispatched calls. But the response time for priority one calls, under 5 minutes, which is really pretty good. The dispatch's goal is 8 minutes. The average response time for priority two calls is still under 8 minutes, almost 8 minutes, but the dispatch goal is 12 minutes. So, you know, oftentimes, and in some jurisdictions, we are seeing police response times 12, 15, 20 minutes, even in, you know, major metropolitan areas. But that does not appear to be the case in Tampa. Now, I don't know if Tampa has switched. You know, we're seeing a number of departments, including Pittsburgh, most recently announcing that, listen, we're not going to be taking and dispatching officers out on every call for service. If there is an active emergency, we'll go. But if it's something that, you know, you can fill out a report, or if, you know, we don't need to be there, then we're not going to be there because we're going to allocate our resources more strategically. I have mixed feelings about that. One of the reasons for this is an understaffing of the Pittsburgh Police Department. You like to think that when you call 911, an officer is going to come out, but that's just not the case. They don't have the personnel to do this. And so they are basically, you know, triaging these calls with the goal of being able to respond to priority one events faster. Tampa seems to be doing that already. And I think that that probably does play a role in the fact that violent crime dropped in Tampa last year. We know that one of the most substantial things that we can do to reduce violent crime is to ensure that there are consequences. I mean, that's common sense, right? But you've got two things that need to happen in order for there to be consequences. First, you have to make an arrest, and then you have to prosecute. An arrest that results in a slap on the wrist and a quick return to the streets, that really doesn't provide a lot of consequences at all. But prosecutors can't do their job unless an arrest is made, right? So these two things work in conjunction with each other. And in order to deliver those consequences for criminal actions, you have to have an arrest and work by prosecutors. Now, again, typically and far too often, that involves a plea deal, not a bench trial. But in Tampa, they do seem to be doing a good job of responding quickly to these crime scenes, which in turn may lead to them being able to make an arrest because the person's still there on the scene. The evidence is there to be collected. It's not been, you know, waiting around for 20 or 30 minutes for somebody to just come along and scoop up a gun or shell casings. And this, again, appears to be having a real impact. Now, I'm not going to go so far as to say that crime in Tampa dropped because of constitutional carry. We don't have any evidence of that. What we do have is plenty of evidence that permitless carry did not increase violent crime in Tampa, right? Again, a 17% decline in firearm-related offenses. That's substantial by any metric. Seen an almost 20% reduction in crimes involving firearms. And again, according to the gun control activists, that simply wasn't going to happen because you were going to have more people walking around with guns, right? More people without training, they said, walking around with guns. And all of these untrained individuals, legally allowed to possess a firearm, mind you, but perhaps not with a concealed carry license. Well, holy moly. I mean, that was going to lead to chaos, anarchy, the wild, wild west. And it didn't happen at all. Not in Tampa, not in Miami, not in Orlando. I haven't seen the numbers for Tallahassee, but I don't believe we saw a big crime spike there either, or Jacksonville. And even outside of Florida, as we've talked about in the past, you know, Ohio Attorney General Dave Yost asked a group of academics in Ohio to look at the crime rates in the state's eight biggest cities over the course of last year. First year that constitutional carry was in place in Ohio. And what those academics found was that in six of the state's eight biggest cities, gun-involved crimes and homicides dropped, didn't increase. Cleveland, a little bit of an outlier. I think Columbus actually saw a little bit of a decline. Cities like Toledo saw a massive drop in homicides in the first year that constitutional carry was in place. Now, again, this is confounding to the anti-gunners, right? It's not supposed to happen. But it makes sense if you're not interested, if you're actually interested in public safety and you're not interested in trying to ban your way to safety, right? We know that in some cities, even a majority of crime, but certainly in most cities, a plurality of crime is committed by a very, very small cohort of people. Less than 1% of the population, maybe less than 1% of a particular city's gang population. And this violent crime is largely confined to a few square blocks in any particular city, right? That's where those hotspots are. Now, those blocks may rotate, right? One month it might be, you know, this corner over here. The next month it might be that corner over there that's seen the spike in violence. But overall, again, we're still talking about a very small number of the population, right? Very small percentage of the population, and a very small, footprint geographically. So the idea that, you know, A, if you pass these gun control laws that just, you know, cover lawful gun owners like a blanket, that that's going to impact violent criminals, it's not. It's going to impact legal gun owners. And in terms of fighting crime, those laws are worthless because the vast majority of people who are going to be impacted will never commit a crime in the first place. So if you start from the approach of, okay, in order to get sort of the most bang for our law enforcement bucks, let's focus on the most violent, prolific offenders, right? And let's disrupt where they're committing these acts of violence, in addition to disrupting who is committing these acts of violence. Well, that's when you can start to see, again, these 30, 40, 50, 60% reductions in homicides, in non-fatal shootings, because it's a targeted deterrence effort, right? Now, again, there are a lot of components to this. It's not just about identifying those hotspots, identifying those most prolific offenders, and then making arrests. If you do that, and then you've got a, you know, George Soros backed DA who says, well, we're not going to prosecute these people. I mean, you can bring these cases, but we're just going to let them go. You're not going to see those substantial declines in violent crime. But when you've got both sides of the criminal justice system, police and prosecutors, who utilize the same targeted deterrence approach, then you can see a reduction of violent crime, along with, by the way, a reduction in overall arrests, without impacting anybody's Second Amendment rights. You keep their rights intact, you focus on the most prolific offenders, and everybody wins, except perhaps for those prolific offenders who end up with stiff prison sentences. And again, this is not science fiction. This is not a hypothetical situation. This is the reality of policing in Tampa and Miami and a lot of other cities around the country that have seen legitimate and substantive improvements in public safety while also seeing substantive improvements to our right to keep and bear arms. Gun control advocates say those two things cannot go hand in hand. Cities like Tampa, Miami, proving the anti-gunners wrong. All right, let's turn our attention now to today's armed citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there with a very, very disturbing story out of Utah, where a local TV station is questioning how a parole board has handled a prolific and violent offender over the course of decades. This is the case of James Edward Allums, and KUTV wanted to know why Allums was cut loose, repeatedly granted parole, despite a 40-year history of violent crimes, and now he is most recently accused of attacking, beating, robbing, and trying to kidnap a woman. The 61-year-old Allums is right now in the Salt Lake County Jail. He is accused of an attack last November on one of the owners of the Stag Barber Shop in the Mill Creek neighborhood. The victim in that case spoke to KUTV, but wanted to maintain some anonymity. So she's only using her first name, didn't want to show her face. Her name is Mulan. She had closed the shop. She was walking to her car, she says, when she was approached by Allums last November 8th. He was holding what she thought was a gun, later turned out to be a fake, but sounds like he intended for her to believe that it was real. Charging documents show that Alums demanded that she give him the car keys and then told her to get in the vehicle. She told KUTV that she offered to give him money, but he didn't want money, and he began to push her into the car. She said, "He has a gun on me," and I said, "I have the money." He took the money. He said, "Oh, okay, I don't want the money. Get in the car. Open the car. Get in the car. Give me the car key." He had the gun on me, she said, pushing me. So I go into the car. That's when he brought out duct tape. When she asked him what he was trying to do, she said he began to hit her in the face. She said, he said, "Be quiet." And then he started to hit me. She was severely beaten by Alums, according to authorities. Not only with his hands, but a large metal pole that's basically, you know, got the cement block there at the bottom. She said she fought back, but Alums managed to get away with her keys, her purse, her phone, her wallet. She said she was crawling on her hands and knees when she escaped from the vehicle, screaming for help. And a man found her. She asked him to call 911. The hospital notes indicates that Mulan had life-threatening injuries, multiple wounds to her head and face, lost a fair amount of blood, had a high risk of morbidity mortality with numerous injuries to her face and scalp and an increased heart rate. And again, Mulan is not Alum's first alleged victim here. KUTV reports that Alums had a parole hearing back in 2005. He had already served at that point 7 years for aggravated robbery and was up for parole. He admitted to taking part in the robbery, says he didn't shoot anybody, says he didn't hit nobody with a pistol, nothing like that, no injuries. But apparently, he was granted parole that day and has gone on to further offend. Again, he had a lengthy criminal history even before that attack in 2005. Criminal felony record out of Alabama, multiple crimes. Then in 2007, after he had been released on parole, he was accused of trying to rob a bank, pulling out a knife and asking the teller for money. He was arrested in 2007 by Salt Lake City Police. He ended up, I guess, taking a guilty plea. He was up for a parole violation hearing in 2009. So at that point, he was, again, out. And I guess had already done whatever time he was doing for the bank robbery. He was granted parole on March 2nd, 2010. And since then, he has managed to rack up, according to KUTV, a 53-page offender history report from the Adult Probation and Parole Department. 2017, he was at another parole violation hearing, where his probation officer talked about Alums walking away from a federal halfway house rather than being returned to custody. He was instead granted parole on April 17th, 2018. A little more than a year later, May 18th, 2019, Alum is accused of robbing a dry cleaners. During a parole violation hearing held on August 18th, 2021, the parole board discussed the robbery of the dry cleaners, noting that Alums had been sentenced to 15 months in federal prison to run concurrently with state charges. And he was, yes, once again, granted parole for a fourth time on September 21st, 2021. And then, according to KUTV, Alums was released from state parole, but was kept on a federal detainer only. He apparently was released on parole on August 20th, 2022. The last time that he reported to the Probation and Parole Board was October 10th, 2023. And then again, just a few weeks later, police say he attacked Mulan as she was walking out of her barbershop. So a criminal history that stretches back 40 some odd years. A lot of slaps on the wrist. A lot of early releases. Even again, when Mr. Allams has been arrested and convicted or taken guilty pleas to further crimes, basically the first time he comes up for parole in Utah, the pardon and probation or the parole and probation board says, yeah, you're good to go. We'll see you later. Actually, we don't want to see you later, but we know we're going to see you later. And they cut him loose. You know, this is, again, part of the problem. You can make the arrests. You can make the prosecutions. And hopefully, when, you provide those consequences, the offender is going to say, you know what? I'm not going to run the risk. It's not worth it. When you've got individuals like Mr. Allams, who get caught, who get convicted, who suffer consequences, who go to prison multiple times, and as soon as they get out, they're basically out committing more violent crimes, well, then the metric has to change a little bit, right? You got to think about, okay, well, what types of consequences are going to ensure that this individual does not pose a threat to society? And that's when you have to stop giving them fourth, fifth, sixth chances. You have to stop letting them out as soon as they're eligible and maybe make them serve the entirety of their sentence. Not because we want to be cruel, not because we want to confine somebody to prison for the rest of their lives, but because they have proven that when they get out, they go on to commit more crimes. And so at some point, it's on us to say, okay, well, we have to make sure that the window of opportunity for you is short. And that means keeping you behind bars for as long as we possibly can, because you have demonstrated through your prior history that you are not a good candidate for early release. And, you know, even in states like Utah, which I would consider to be a tough on crime state, all too often, that simply doesn't happen. Now, today's armed citizen story from Birmingham, Alabama. A shooting on Friday that authorities say was an act of self-defense. They will not be filing charges against the armed citizen in question. According to authorities, police arrived at a home in East Birmingham on Friday, found 33-year-old Jeremy Andrews unresponsive inside the home. He was pronounced dead on the scene. There were at least two children in the home when the shooting took place. According to Officer Truman Fitzgerald with the Birmingham Police Department, the investigation shows that a man and a woman were involved in a domestic argument. Andrews then arrived at the house and started beefing with the gentleman inside the home as well. It was during that second argument, police say, that Andrews was shot. Police initially said that the suspect had fled the scene, but in an update, they actually said he was taken into custody at the scene, held in the Birmingham City Jail in a 48-hour hold as the investigation continued. But after that 48 hours was up, he was released. According to police, both the armed citizen and the individual who was shot were armed. And again, it appears that Andrews, who was shot and killed, was the initial aggressor in that incident, and the armed citizen in the home shot in self-defense. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, will enable to do the right thing. A anonymous Good Samaritan in Albuquerque, New Mexico, who came to the aid of an 84-year-old man who had his mobility scooter stolen. What kind of piece of walking garbage do you have to be to steal an octogenarian's mobile scooter? It's ridiculous. Jack Cutshaw had his mobility scooter stolen off of his apartment porch last month. He said, I parked it just outside my door. I got up Thursday morning and I went out and there was no scooter, which was a shock, he said, to say the least. So KOB Channel 4 in Albuquerque ran a story last month talking about, again, just how crappy it was that somebody would steal this man's mobility scooter. And the station was apparently inundated with calls and emails from people saying, what can we do to help? And one anonymous woman decided that she would actually donate a motorized scooter to Cutshaw just of her own accord. She doesn't want any recognition. She's doing this again just as an anonymous Good Samaritan. But she did tell the TV station she was, quote, overjoyed to give the scooter to Cutshaw, and Cutshaw was overjoyed to receive it. He says it's only been in his possession a couple of days, but he's already getting the hang of it. He says now he and his companion Jane can ride to dinner together again. He said, next I'm going to see how many races I can get involved in. I like Jack Cutshaw. He sounds like the type of guy I'd like to hang out with. He said, you know, by the way, he said, I've mentioned to everybody, you know, anything you have to keep it locked up, keep it inside, keep it under lock and key, because there are a lot of bad folks out there. There are. And in Albuquerque, Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham has decided that, you know what, the really bad folks are those concealed carry holders, not the pieces of trash who would steal an 84-year-old man's motorized scooter, because that's who she's going after, right? Lawful gun owners. Not violent criminals or even those committing property crimes like stealing an elderly man's ability to get around. So whoever that anonymous Good Samaritan was, and I don't think it was the governor, thank you for your very good deed. And to Jack, once again, back on the road, I'm glad to know that you're going to be keeping that scooter under close guard, but I hope that you and Jane enjoy many, many more dinners to come. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program, as always. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking with Eric Pratt from Gun Owners America. You know, GOA is fighting back against the ATF's zero-tolerance policy for supposedly, you know, those bad apple gun dealers. So if you make a paperwork error, they're trying to yank your FFL license. We'll get an update from Eric on GOA's efforts. Looking forward to talking to him tomorrow also. Don't forget to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day. We're keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. If you like what you see, I'd encourage you to become a VIP or VIP Gold member as well. Just go to BearingArms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code SAVEAMERICA, and you can get a significant savings on your VIP or VIP membership. That's our way of saying thanks. We're going to give you exclusive content you won't find anywhere else, because your support really does matter, and it truly does make a difference. So thank you again. Enjoy the rest of your 2A Tuesday. I'll be on Newsmax with Carl Higbee in the 5 p.m. Eastern hour. And I'll see you back here tomorrow for the Wednesday edition of Cam & Company. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.